Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. We've heard the sentence, "I'm not racist," quite a bit lately, from politicians, from some businessmen. Author Ibram X. Kendi, the director of American University's Anti-Racist and Research Policy Center, wants people to understand that that proclamation is not adequate. Instead, Kendi says the appropriate and ultimately more effective way to fight bigotry based on race is by being anti-racist. His new book is titled How to Be an Anti-Racist, and it uses historical facts, sociology, data, and personal anecdotes to lay out all the insidious ways that racist policies and therefore racist ideas have entered the American consciousness. And as he diagnoses the problem, Kendi provides some solutions, some suggestions, new ways of approaching conversations about race that could help cure the country of racism, which he likens to a cancer. I'm going to read this page from your book, this paragraph, because it's so great. You write, "Saturate the body politic with the chemotherapy or immunotherapy of anti-racist policies that shrink the tumors of racial inequities that kill undetectable cancer cells. Remove any remaining racist policies, the way surgeons remove tumors. Ensure there are clear margins, meaning no cancer cells of inequity left in the body politic, only the healthy cells of equity. Encourage the consumption of healthy foods for thought and the regular exercising of anti-racist ideas to reduce the likelihood of a recurrence. Monitor the body politic closely, especially where the tumors of racial inequity previously existed. Detect and treat a recurrence early before it can grow and threaten the body politic." How to Be an Anti-Racist is available now. Ibram Kendi joins us in studio. And fair warning, folks, this conversation could include some racially charged language. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
When you were writing this book, who was the audience you had in mind?
Well, I think first and foremost, people who are open-minded, mm-hmm. people who recognize that there is a serious, or even not so serious, problem of racism and inequality in this country, people who are recognizing racial polarization, trying to figure out the source of it, and ultimately people who want to be a part of the movement to sort of heal America from its original sin.
So in your mind, you weren't necessarily trying to change anyone's mind with this book.
Not necessarily. I mean, we all know people who are going to change have to first make that decision for themselves. And so for those people who've already made that decision or who are in the process of making that decision, this certainly is a book that could help them.
At the foundation, we talked about saying, "I'm not a racist." They should try to think about being an anti-racist. And the way I thought about it, please correct me if I'm wrong, was the idea of making racist the adjective. Well, so you're like a racist teacher or a racist policy or a racist black person, which we'll get to in a minute, versus an anti-racist, a noun. It's something that you are. You should be an anti-racist. What's the difference in your mind? That's the way I took it in.
Well, I think both racist and anti-racist are descriptive terms. And so they're not fixed identities. They're not tattoos. They're not in one's bones or in one's heart. And the reason why that's important is because I think many Americans self-identify as not racist because we've been taught that racist is a fixed identity, that mm-hmm. it is in one's bones, that it is fundamentally a bad person. It is a white supremacist. And people don't want to connect with that. But I think what many Americans don't realize is that when they say, "I'm not racist," they are actually connecting with white supremacists who have historically consistently said, "I'm not racist too." Eugenicists said, "I'm not racist." Jim Crow segregationists said, "I'm not racist."
So the idea is, "I'm not racist, but it's this way anyway."
Yes. And it's really it's a term of denial. It's a term, it's a defensive term. While anti-racist is, there's a clear idea of what that means, meaning an anti-racist views the racial groups as equals. Mm-hmm. An anti-racist is supporting policies that create racial equity, while a racist is supporting policies that create racial inequity. A racist is someone saying that certain racial groups are better or worse than another.
Okay, so the reason I thought about it as a noun is because of the title, an anti-racist, someone who is an anti-racist versus someone who is not racist. I'm curious about intention too. If a person is acting in a racist manner or thinking racist thoughts, but they don't mean to be, or they don't understand that they are doing that, they don't mean to be actively bigoted, is that person still a racist?
Yes. And it's just like we're in a relationship with people, mm-hmm. right? And I've been in relationships when someone would hurt me and say, oh, I didn't intend to hurt you.
Right.
And I think we should focus on the outcome, the hurt, rather than the intent. Because really, even in relationships, what happens when we say, oh, that's not my intention, in many ways, we're being defensive. In many ways, we're not acknowledging and taking responsibility for what our actions and what our words have literally done. And literally, when we say there's something wrong with a racial group, that is a problem that we need to take responsibility for. When we support policies that drive inequity in this country, we need to take responsibility for it. And the way we do is we say, yes, we were being racist when we did that, when we said that, but we're going to change.
Why do you think people don't want to take responsibility?
I think, going back to what we were talking about earlier, because they fundamentally connect racist with fixed, with bad person, with white supremacist. And it's much more convoluted and mm-hmm. complex than that. We've had people who I admire, who are good people, who were abolitionists, who were civil rights activists, who thought there was something wrong with black people. There are people we admire who still sometimes fall into these traps because in many ways we are taught, we're trained to think that the problems of our society are at least partially people.
It's interesting. Part of your book, by the way, my guest is Ibram X. Kendi. The name of his book is How to Be an Anti-Racist. Part of the book, a lot of the book is personal stories.
Yeah.
And there's this line that has been sticking with me when you said you were going through racist puberty, that's a racial puberty at some point, when you started to really sort of think about your race when you were, I guess, 11 or 12 years old. That's such an interesting way to put it. What made you align your awakening or your understanding of race with puberty?
Well, yeah, it was from a story in which my parents and I were interviewing a teacher because we were considering going to the school, and the teacher was black, and I noticed from pictures in the school that none of the other teachers were black. And so I asked that teacher, I believe I was 7 years old, are you the only black teacher? And through that exchange, I realized, and more importantly, I write about how my parents realized that I had gained a racial conception, that I recognized that I was racialized mm-hmm. as black. And in many ways, it necessitated my parents having the conversation that we oftentimes have about other topics when somebody reaches puberty. But in the case of particularly children of color, parents feel the need, obviously, to have a conversation about what it means to be a black person in this society.
You changed your middle name.
Yes.
Your middle name was Henry, and you changed it to, I don't want to mispronounce it.
Zolani.
Why did you change your middle name?
So I never really, no offense to anyone who's named Henry, wasn't a favorite name of mine, to say the least. But then also I realized that really the world's first racist was named Henry, Prince Henry the Navigator, who pretty much financed and organized the Portuguese engaging and starting what became known as the transatlantic slave trade. The Portuguese really led that off, and Prince Henry was the one who led that off, and the policies, specifically the racist policies, was really what started racism itself.
What did it mean for you to change it? Why was that important to you? What did that do for you personally? What did that do for you emotionally?
Well, you know, as I write about in How to Be an Anti-Racist, Henry, Prince Henry, the slave trade and racist policies that followed brought so much war and violence and death to black lives, to really so many human lives, mm-hmm. And created so much sort of violence. And so I changed it to Solani, meaning peace, because, you know, I wanted my sort of presence on this earth and more or less how I'm sort of named and categorized to be an engine of peace as opposed to war and violence.
My guest is Ibram Zolani Kendi. The name of his book is How to Be an Anti-Racist. This was interesting. In your book, you say that it's not necessarily hate or ignorance that continues to drive racist policies and policymakers, but this is the quote, economic, political, and cultural self-interest. How does self-interest and self-interested policies then inspire hate and ignorance.
Sure. So let me take a current example. There have been a rash of new voter ID laws that certain politicians have passed over the last 5 years. And the reason why they put these laws in place is because these Republicans were targeting African-American voters with, quote, surgical precision, the quote, a North Carolina court. And essentially, they were targeting their political opponents, suppressing votes so that they can either get in office or maintain office. But then the next step was they had to justify, okay, why are we putting in place these voter ID laws? So they made the case of voter fraud. They made the case that there was this Black or Latinx fraudulent voter. And there's this long history of apparently, you know, people of color being fraudulent voters, which then caused people to believe those ideas, to consume those ideas, and ultimately become ignorant and hateful. And so I actually track in my work how actually the racist policy and the need to justify it led to the racist idea. And then people consumed those ideas and became ignorant and hateful.
You also write, the most threatening racist movement is not the alt-right's unlikely drive for a white ethnostate, but the regular American's drive for a race-neutral one. That idea of being colorblind. Why do you see that as a bigger threat?
Because ultimately, if we do not recognize the mirage of race. In other words, what I mean by mirage, it exists, but it doesn't exist. But it exists in a real way that impacts people. If we don't categorize by race, we're just colorblind. We imagine that all of these policies are race neutral, then we're not going to be able to recognize and see racial inequity, even though it exists, right? Because we're not even categorizing or seeing by race. And then if we can't see racial inequity, how can we see what's causing that racial inequity, which is racist policies? And if we can't see racist policies, how can we challenge racist policies? So essentially, racist policies will live on and continue to hurt and harm and create inequality, and we won't even be able to see it, let alone challenge it and eliminate it. The likelihood of that happening is far higher than white supremacists creating a white ethnostate.
I often sometimes think when people say they're colorblind or race neutral, it's a bit of a get out of jail free card that they would like. Because this is just a conversation point, but how can you be race neutral? You should think about someone's whole being, their whole life. It's when you start to put judgments and quality and value on what it is when we start to go down the road of racism. Someone's life experience should be acknowledged.
Precisely. And really, one of the distinctions between being anti-racist and being what I call in my work assimilationist, which is essentially trying to create this one single American that speaks the same language, that wears the same clothes, that talks the same way, that worships the same way. The distinction with anti-racist is we appreciate difference. We level difference. We see all of these different colors. We should be striving to see all these different colors, these different cultures, these different ethnicities, these different ways of life, and seeing equality, right? And I think that when people imagine themselves as colorblind, they're in a way erasing the beauty, the beautiful rainbow, and this beautiful amount of diversity that really makes this nation great.
That kind of goes back to an earlier conversation point. I think people, when they say that, though, a lot of people think that they're doing the right thing. Like they really are well-meaning.
And I think that they don't realize, like I think many Americans don't realize that white supremacists and eugenicists and segregationists are saying they're not racist. They don't realize that white supremacists are saying that racist is a racial slur. And many Americans don't realize that, even though they're opposed to white supremacists. Likewise, they don't realize that the term colorblind became popular around 1997 when President Clinton decided to lead this national conversation on race. And then those who were against having that conversation put forth, oh, there's no need for us to talk about race. Race is solved. you know, we don't need to talk about this. We're colorblind.
My guess is Ibram Kendi, the name of his book is How to Be an Anti-Racist. Is racism behavioral?
So racism is behavioral in the sense that people's ideas, their racist ideas, when they, for instance, think that black people are lazy, then are they're going to be less likely to hire them, right? But it's also behavioral in that it manipulates us, it controls us, it causes us to see people who are innocent as guilty, to see people who are nonviolent as violent, to treat people who are loving as hateful. I mean, it doesn't allow us to behave in the real world. It literally creates this alternative universe that doesn't really exist.
You write about black racists in your book, and I think that's a record scratch for some people. Explain how black people can be racist.
So I define a racist as someone who is expressing a racist idea. And racist ideas are any ideas that suggest a racial group is better or worse than another, that there's something wrong with a racial group, or supporting policies that create racial inequity. I, for instance, talked about my own story in which I grew up in Jamaica, Queens, and I was led to believe when I was younger that black youth didn't value education. There was something wrong with black youth, that black youth were too often climbing the high tree of pregnancy, that black youth were hypersexual. There was something wrong with black youth. I thought that there was all these things wrong with black people. And to think that there is something wrong with any racial group is to think a racist idea. Because, and what those ideas do to black people in particular, like they do to non-black people, is it causes us to see black people as the problem as opposed to racist policies. And then we spend our time going after, challenging, denigrating, or even trying to civilize black people as opposed to challenging racist policies. So then it creates, or I should say it maintains, racial inequity, which fundamentally are harming us.
There's been this increased focus on integration, largely because of the political debates that clash between Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris. And here in New York City, there's a huge debate over how to desegregate the schools in the city, which are among the most segregated in the country in New York City. But you argue in the book that full integration isn't necessarily the goal. So what should we be striving for?
I think that we should be striving for the equality of resources. And simultaneously, we should be striving to make sure every space is desegregated, meaning everyone has access to different schools and different spaces. And we should be striving to ensure that these different spaces that are, let's say this space is, you know, African-American culture predominates, or this space, Korean-American culture predominates, that we value those spaces equally. I'm concerned because when we think about complete and total integration, which essentially would mean that white people are in the majority in every single space in the United States, that will literally prevent the cultures and the ways of life of people of color to have institutional spaces to grow.
Of all the political candidates out there, all the boldface names, not just the ones running for president, who do you think really gets it about being an anti-racist? Is there any politician you think who's doing really good work or really seems to get it?
Stacey Abrams. As I think many Americans are, I mean, she has consistently said what the problem has historically been, which has been racism. She's even recognized the ways in which American policies are not only affecting people of color, but even working class white people. I've never really heard her say that there was something wrong with a particular racial group. You know, I've heard her consistently challenge racism and other forms of bigotry, because in order to truly be anti-racist, you have to be against every form of bigotry, because all of these other forms of bigotry are constantly intersecting and reinforcing racism. And she certainly has challenged every form of bigotry. And I think that's why she's so well-liked and well-loved, really, by many different groups of people.
And it seems to be authentic from
Definitely.
Her. If someone has been listening to this conversation and thinks, I want to be an anti-racist, what would be one thing you think maybe they should read? Maybe something they should listen to, YouTube, TED, something that could help them start this path?
Well, I would say first and foremost, even before they can read something, and we have to recognize that we possibly could be holding we could possibly be believing racist ideas. The denial of racism is the heartbeat of racism. While the heartbeat of anti-racism is confession, is admitting, is recognizing, okay, what are some of the ways I think that there's something wrong with a racial group? And we have to be willing to acknowledge that before we can even start on this journey. Like, that literally is the first step.
Do the self-work first.
Precisely.
My guest has been Ibram X. Kendi, Zolani Kendi. The name of the book is How to Be an Anti-Racist. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
This has been All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you at the top of the hour.